Because second harbour, take at least about 10 days to operate the tank, probably because of the winds. But also because it's not meant to be such a command to the ship neglect around us. So everyone has to have a chance to go to China. There's an interesting experience to go to China to look at a port. And I've attended this port in the world, centered on China. They reverted massively in capital equipment. Those ports now work 24/7. And that's what's going to drive China's capacity to export to the exporting part of the world. If you don't invest in technology and equipment, machinery, and training for our ports, we're not going to grow in manufacturing sector. In fact, we'll lose manufacturing because China will not take it as many times. And you know, the significance is that the cost of any pressure and the cost of extreme pressure. See, I think also the key thing is our cable sets. And of course, as we all know, the huge impact in the cable system, as I was delayed in metro there, we have cable sets. It means lots of electrical workers who are delayed to work 2 hours a day. Then it's come back to school. And of course, it's difficult for factories to perform at optimal level. So we have this continuous delay. So you remember from this, there was quite a bad train accident in Pretoria. With casualties, people died because of cable sets. People were going for it. So, about papers of 4 years ago, roughly, we passed the fifth part of the amendment for criminal matters and impacts, which reprovided the holding measures to deal with cable sets. Three senators may call their role in cable sets, but as far as I know, only one person was sent to prison as a consequence. And that really was a powerful stick to beat this criminal syndicate. We think more often acknowledged success by this year's administration. But I think the syndicate has done quite well on this copper image, the dedicated industry to cable sets. We don't think that the government will replicate across the city, etc. Because the level of cable sets, copper sets, are unbelievable. We've got one copper mine in the country, but our export of copper far outpaces that mine production. And that is cable sets. That will take a lot of time to do this, which is simply value of sensing. Chair, I think you also all know about the massive level of arsenic in the chain. I think last time we lost about 100 tons in the cake on the cut of arsenic. I think there's only one round of that around us. And it's quite a large chain. Our measure for 3 years. This is inside the walls. It can't be that they, you can have 4 days of living in the street, and it's so much petrol. Knowing exactly where to accept which chain is fired, not be comprehended. And often things, the report of industry from our members, that the security coming around Baltimore. Maybe becoming a tender come to an end, they want to extend the tender, or whether the right security company wants to close the security company. Whatever it is, there has to be a non-consent amendment. And you can answer questions, why are the Baltimore facilities, the tender facilities, not being requested? The chair also we are looking at challenges with the main stage of the facility. You've seen that in all the metro rail line. But even also tax. I think about 3 months of this day we're going to have. Venture, which is on the stage of the present. The chair, the second part of our presentation is coming to just look at what are proposed interventions. We're looking at about 17 interventions that are critical to reviving the state. Whether you're comprehensive public policy or a child of contract with the censorship, we need to work to know whether we should make it hard to stop it. But again, Chair, it's not enough to do a friend's order. We must implement the recommendations of the order, which we failed to do. We were quite shocked to hear that from the $2,000, but they're not in active support. So we agreed to send many chiefs to this criminal area to our chief of state. We want to be chair. Taking all the other companies and all the corrupt, illegal, and overpriced contracts. We want to see China investigate the insourcing of contract workers and consumers to learn more effectively and efficiently about China itself. Many of these are extremely simple. They're very powerful. It's part of the technical industry for corrupt officials. And I think, Chair, we want to see China taking a lead from the new CSO to implement lighter and the formalities for supply chain officials. That's what we're finding. So there has to be those process for the business to possible. And you see in November, just before the elections, the fifth power passed the electoral record for the Freedom Act, which is now able to state the whole management responsible for mismanagement, for corruption, and even for the attention in the country. You will see that as part of the Freedom Charge, you need to have a representation of transfer boards and other boards within the group, including the real safety boards. While the launch of the relevant staff will be reduced, the drop of taxes will be cut, and capable permanent management employees in this culture acting across the land of the time. We have had colleagues in a certain case of the new CEO, and we hope she will be beginning to the ship around us. While we will obviously share a still note of the staff transfer so that we can look at this continuum as necessary, and of course, we look at head counts to see what they can be doing. And if you look at the colleagues in the transfer group, you will still work effectively. Chair on two of the duties. The Minister of Police, as you said, has long called for very progress to change the instead of trying to outsource the security function and talk about the new man in the to import that function to establish a dedicated police level unit to deal with it. It's very difficult for those security guards to report to deal with criminal gangs across the country. You're not going to be able to come to a case on the edge simply by getting a walkie-talkie and make it a little more specific. Those gangs will deal with the security guards and testify themselves. You either have to link to their own community once again, or dedicate a careful person up to you. But also share, you need to have active involvement from community, community boards, neighborhood watchers, and communities to control those networks in their communities. Chair, we would need to see a comprehensive debt repayment plan by the transfer group to other SMEs that have called. We can't have this budget every month to start their payroll, so SMEs has to turn off their electricity to get into payment of having a bid, disrupting the entire economy. So we need to see a significant major infrastructure revitalization program on the European government and the for another 9 years. It would really need to be an urgent discussion with the private sector and public financial finance institutions about impact investment. The backlog is too deep, economic critical to achieve major targets are too important to reach the sector. We need to have a discussion between the PIP, the VFI, the private sector for partnering with us in charter and growth. And of course, we think we need to prioritize future rail, freight rail, and the port. Chair, we want to see more effective states by rebuilding the local chain and access capacity, especially export trading. This is a huge improvement we can get export chains in every state if we can pass it around. And there needs to be much further links to neighboring states, railway construction networks. And of course, Chair, this is a longer term vision. We will initially come between China and the European States, about building high-speed railway network between Johannesburg and Durban, across Kenya, the Republic of Cape Town. We've never had a discussion about the Durban Bridge, but we really need to start moving much faster. So I think that's all the presentation is public. I think we also feel to the committee, there are about two critical bills that are in the pipeline, but it is the government moves to the speed of the snail of energy. And it's a railway safety bill which is going to come. I'm not sure why this bill is delayed, but overhauling the railway safety regulator. So the people transport economic regulator will focus on the pipeline. We think they're going to be quite critical to overhauling the system. But again, so we need to look at the culture of the development of the transport accountable. And it's up to us, Chair, to start to increase the business and neighbors, to be able to support them to see it, otherwise it will fly. But I think you really want to see a clear channel plan from government and partners and for cities, which should include a long-term vision. And I think you really want to see a social compact of this new platform, also being developed around the transfer board, where it all contributes to a fair and strong marketing. So that's it in a nutshell, Chair. I hope I captured the time. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Vincent.
and said to him, you remember, best of all, and he says to Lord Stockton, dear apologies for not having been free today, but fine. So that I will remember from having a little thing. So we were delegated by a group of business and nutrition advocates to come to the meeting today, but my colleague and I, myself, my name is Peter Bussell, and my name is the Ralph in the grain industry, we're from the agribusiness industry, agricultural business chamber, with a focus on rural development involved today. That we're that so, critical stakeholders can represent, and the reason why the Transnet is, and of course the Elcom port, as well as the ports are so important to us, is the food value chain, which is of course the cold storage value chain, as well as the bulk, the movement of bulk grain, especially especially wheat and what and wheat and maize. So just the agricultural industry is being what's referred to as a sunrise industry in the sense that although there's a lot of seasonal variance depending on climatic conditions, this is an area where especially exports have been growing consistently for the last 10, 15, 30 years. So slide 4, you can see the trade balance. The industry does actually have positive trade balance in terms of the value of exports exceed the value of our imports. So the total value of the last assessment of agricultural exports is roughly 140 billion rand per year. So it's a growing economy, but of course the logistics is a huge aspect of that. It's a difference between commodities. It's estimated that the price of food, roughly 25% to 30% of the price of food can be attributed to logistics costs. And especially when one speaks about things such as the grain, the movement from the farms to the silos, from the silos to millers, millers to bakers, and finally to retailers. So there's a significant logistics aspect to that, and that is why it's so important. And of course, the port efficiency, as far as exporting concerns, is incredibly important. So we have had fairly good interactions with the port authority and transit trade around the way. Some good discussions taking place, and this really is a critical partnership to increase exports and to grow the economy and create jobs. In our sector. So the continuous improvement in logistics is of course the focus that we have, and that is the socio-economic development of countries. So just a bit of a background in terms of rail transport for the agricultural industry. Prior to 1994, the vast majority of bulk agricultural products was actually transported by rail, but it has changed dramatically of late. So previously the agricultural sector was very highly regulated, one of the marketing boards which would control the and arrange the logistics and the transport of all the grains, for example. These marketing boards in 1997 were disestablished, which means each and every company that operates silos would have to arrange their own logistics or their logistics. And as a result of that, the railway share of transport increased dramatically. And there are other considerations, of course, as well. You know, some of the less profitable lines were decommissioned. Especially the silos that have led to a number of those silos. And the state investment also shifted dramatically from railway infrastructure towards road infrastructure, which also then was followed by businesses migrating to road transport. The downside, of course, of that, as my colleagues have identified, is there are new socio-economic challenges that come with that, especially the road fatality as a result of increased congestion. So perhaps in slide 3 there on slide 7, and that just shows you the trend that's been taking place, and this is just a snapshot of the last 15 years. So the share of freight rail transport for wheat and maize especially has steadily gone down, whilst road transport has increased. The same has also been true for soybeans. However, soybeans recently, the crushing capacity was increased with new plants that were created. So there was no railway infrastructure put in place. The new factories were built in the last 5 to 10 years. So moving on to slide 9, there is a huge potential in shifting back from road transport towards rail transport. Because internationally speaking, rail transport does have a comparative price advantage when compared to road transport. And unfortunately, it isn't the case currently in South Africa, but with the right investment and partnership, it does have the potential to be so. The knock-on effect of that would be quite great, because of course decreased costs for the industry means greater competitiveness of the industry, which can actually lead to greater exports, And of course, the agricultural sector is currently export heavy in growth. So the economic development and job creation will most likely come on the back of increased competitiveness and increased exports. Especially, and this is especially true of the fruit industry. So there are, of course, also another motivation for potential shift back to rail is that there is increasingly risk associated with road transport, especially bulk commodities. I mean, the restrictions placed on high-speed containers that are necessary for the coal chain on road transport, which has recently come into force, so that definitely increases the risk for road transport as far as the coal chain for food are concerned. The R2 amendment bill and the demerit points that go with that, of course, that is a risk, I think, for road logistics, as well as, of course, the increasing congestion on the roads and the increased costs associated with fuel. So the infrastructure does exist to a large extent for rail. As I mentioned, because you had this large shift, and previously it was predominantly rail and now it's road, the advantage is that the infrastructure does, it already exists in a lot of the pilots, and there are many centre work and refurbishment. Some of these signings are managed by private entities, some of them are managed by municipalities, and municipalities especially don't see it as part of their core functions, so there wasn't really an interest or it wasn't a budgetary concern to maintain these sites. So that is a challenge in infrastructure side. Another aspect is that investment into rail can certainly also unlock development in some of the rural areas. There are areas that are growing in agriculture, especially on the back of land reform and farm development programs. A good example is that in the Patial region, that has the natural potential for, say, sorghum production, other types of grain production, but the road infrastructure to get that all the way to the closest silos and processing facilities makes it unviable or really a challenge facing these farmers and market access. If there was targeted investment in terms of rail access in areas that we know are through land reform going to become, and climate change also going to become new areas for especially grain production, that definitely will play a critical role in rural development in terms of facilitating physical market access where there isn't currently market access. So broadly speaking, there's a few central requirements to achieve sort of the road to rail shift as well as efficiency in the port infrastructure that will improve export is finalising the regulatory framework, just as the previous presenter has also identified. Filling the data gap, so there is still some critical information that member stakeholders don't collectively have, so that's a process that's ongoing, as well as the commitment between regular meetings between the parts of the transport, the straight rail as well as the ports authority and industry, the agricultural and business industry. So just focusing on the regulatory framework, so the policy direction on the draft white paper for national rail policy was quite promising. We believe that it's a certain aiming for business in the sense that regulated on-rail competition for qualified third-party operators was made provision for. So we mentioned that Transnet did shut down a lot of the sidings that weren't as profitable in the mid-90s when compared to, for example, the sidings that were carrying coal down to Richards Bay, for example, because it's never comparative advantage. However, given the recent development, there might be merit in relooking at some of those, and some public-private partnerships between some of these companies and so on, is facilitated by an independent regulator. It might be worthwhile refurbishing some of those sizes, especially with private sector and DFI investments. So opening up the investment by private sector, I think, is certainly very, very important. And there has been interest shown from private sector entities as well as from international donors. You know, the Dutch government, for example, has also kind of done investigation to see where it may be viable to invest into the rail infrastructure. However, the regulatory environment needs to be in place, and it's not currently in place. So having a single economic regulator for rail transport, as the previous speaker suggested, I think is absolutely critical to facilitate that investment. So investors are really looking for the can't move until that regulatory framework is finalised and acted into law. The National Rail Transport Policy from 2015 did also have a number of gaps in it. So there was a lack of clarity on the roles and responsibilities. So even though it does make provisions for third-party operations, exactly the conditions under which that could take place is still a challenge. There's also a lack of coordination and integrated planning, which is especially relevant for export groups. it won't be viable. One can't have a situation where full trains, for example, of course, export, but they come back up to a grain producing area, that might not be economically viable. So integration and coordination with other industries would definitely require integrated planning methodology. And I think certainly line set is very important, but there's also the instances of the physical infrastructure, the physical rail tracks that have also been fixed and vandalized. So an integrated plan and how to manage that, which I think the previous speaker outlined quite well, is certainly required. And this does affect services quite substantially. On the port side as well, the National Ports Authority Bill, this is also a draft bill that's been presented to NetApp recently, but hasn't been enacted yet. And again, also explicitly the rail authority from the rest of Transnet. And as it was presented to us at NetApp, which we believe has substantial merit, is that it can ensure that the revenue generated at ports of entry and exit is reinvested back into upgrading and maintaining the infrastructure. So as we understand, what's currently happening is that revenue that's being generated is being used to cross-subsidize other rail operations. So that is really a challenge for the need to aid infrastructure at ports. Fortunately, there is some good investment taking place, but once the regulatory environment is finalized, that can move a lot faster. Again, that bill also makes provision for licensed operators, so independent third-party operators of ports, but subject to regulatory conditions. And these conditions are important to ensure that there's a balance, of course, in the public interest best taken into consideration when one does allow private entities to operate public infrastructure. There is still a substantial gap in data as well. You know, the private sector, as well as Transnet, as well as the Department of Transport, has a certain information, but currently the information is not well integrated, and there are still gaps in this information. So NetApp has now made funds available to do specific research into the viability of moving from road to rail for the grain industry. So that's ongoing work that's currently being conducted. And specifically, they're looking at the status and condition of the branch lines and sidings, especially where in multiple sidings there's a big lack of coordinated information. So the research will deliver that information. And the current movement of grain by road, this is also a challenge. So while Transnet has information about what's currently being moved by rail, because private entities organize their own road transport, we don't have a very good sense of exactly how much grain, especially in this instance, is being shifted from where to where by road. Because that information is vitally important when one does look at which side you should invest in and where it might be viable to move back onto rail. The position of where the nodes are, I mentioned the silos and the millers especially are quite important. They're probably unlikely to use rail transport from farm to silos, but where specific nodes are concerned, I think it's very important to identify where those are and what the status of those nodes are. As well as the future expansion plans. I mean, I mentioned through land reform as well as climate change, there is somewhat of an idea of research is also to be conducted currently about where the future areas might be where rail infrastructure is required. And that's probably where the digital economic and rural development potential might be. So industry has also done some collaboration with Transnet, and as a result of some discussion with Transnet, done some of its own research. And specifically, they're looking to what are the concerns and the fears for grain companies. Why are they not currently operating on rail, and why are they chosen rail? So there are substantial service delivery challenges. As I mentioned, some of these are related to, I think, the client liaison from Transnet. Some of them are also unrelated, for example, the session vandalism, which drives a substantial challenge. Infrastructure, as I mentioned, is also a challenge, especially because the certain signs are based in different state entities as well as the private sector, and what's the functionality of it. In other words, in some of the signs, existing infrastructure that's been removed and abandoned and used in over 20 years. And some of the millers also don't necessarily have the rail infrastructure or infrastructure to receive by rail. So the recommendation that we make there is that district resolution mechanisms are coming to play and specific industry liaisons to this where there are concerns with service delivery problems. We've also conducted some research in terms where we asked specific companies what are the benefits of road versus rail to try to get a better idea of what the feasibility of the shift might be. So the benefit of rail is it will faster offloading because you can move bulk. If you move by truck, you have done offloading truck individually, so it will save time. So rail, you can move a lot more bulk. Precise mass shipment with offloading of rail trucks is of course easier. And consignment can be fumigated on rail. So in other words, we have a large bulk amount that can be transported by rail. It is easier to ensure control is used because you can fumigate entire shipment. The benefit of road is of course that rail is very often does take excessively long, and that's part of the service delivery challenges. Where road is generally quite flexible in terms you can send it exactly when you want to send it, exactly where you want to send it to. Rail of course doesn't offer that same level of flexibility, so that's not very challenging. Road is also more adaptable in terms of the pricing as well as the service, especially with multiple service providers, but also the better performing service providers when you tend to get the business, and there is a choice for businesses. And at the moment, as I mentioned, the benefits of road is that the rates are competitive with rail, which isn't the international law. Internationally, rail is about a third the price when you're moving bulk things such as grain versus rail. So that's another challenge. We also asked Miller specifically what is the appetite for receiving by rail, and fortunately, roughly 90% of them are willing and able to receive by rail, so there's also a big boost for the road and rail industry. But then the challenge is we also asked some of the companies operating rail silos, how many of the sidings and how many of the lines that go past the silos are still active, and as you can see from the graph there, only roughly 50% of those branch lines are actually still active. So if we're moving from road to rail in a large scale will still be a substantial challenge. So the recommendations in this regard, as I mentioned, is ongoing research, so that should definitely be prioritized, but regular interaction and meetings between industry and the relevant stakeholders, such as Transnet and the Department of Transport and Port Authority, is absolutely necessary. So there has been good positive engagement of late, but I think the structured platform with the commitment to regular meetings is certainly what's required. So a transfer of information, sharing of information, so we can get a more holistic sense of the logistics framework and where the low-hanging fruit might be, especially for aspects such as road to rail. And also more responsive crisis management. There was recently a case at the Kuka Harbour where there was some disruption. We actually use a NetApp platform for business and Transnet needs to resolve some of those challenges the citrus industry suffered huge losses there. So the ripple effect was again of course on employment and profitability. So if there was a dedicated dispute resolution and crisis management linkage between private sector and Transnet, that would certainly assist greatly. So that is in a nutshell our recommendations as well as the status update about what the potential for socioeconomic development is if we can get improved report efficiency as well as the rate. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Bushall.
First of all, I might be a bit controversial, but let me speak straight from the hip. It is sad to state that we are of the view that Transnet has failed the country, especially if one looks at the unit that was to have set up the oversee rail local content push. In August 2016, the Minister in the Presidency for Monitoring and Evaluation, Jeffrey Deby, indicated that it would have oversight over the localization programs at both Transnet Freight Rail and the Passenger Rail Agency of South Africa.
Just raise a few issues. That's
Sorry for that, I apologize. It was short notice and I didn't have the opportunity to, such as my colleagues, to have done a presentation. If we look at the stipulated threshold for local production and content, which was supposed to be 60% for electric locomotives and 55% for diesel locomotives, with various components such as car body shells and bones, we are of the view that at this point in time, we never achieved any of those figures. And this has prevented the markets out there to be able to create jobs for the South African market. Because had we controlled that particular process more ruggedly and ensured that there wasn't corruption and ensured that the investments took place where it was supposed to take place, then I'm sure that we could have created more jobs and we could have created better environments for all. The Department of Trade and Industry had indicated that he was concerned about whether four of the original equipment manufacturers that had been awarded part of the 50 billion contract to supply 1064 electric locomotives and diesel locomotives to Transnet were in a position to meet the minimum threshold set out in the local content. The 7-year program, unless provided otherwise to date, has failed South Africa. We need to learn from our mistakes, go back to the drawing board, and do assessments where did it all go wrong, as if that we were overzealous with our predictions at the time. Furthermore, the question to be asked is what have we done to get the projections back on track so that jobs can be created to ensure localization? We believe if we achieve 35% localization to date, it must be extreme. Transnet established the servicing of wagons as an example to try and revive a railway town such as Dahar. They moved a servicing site there to service the specific wagons that transport the civil environments for Transnet. And if one goes and looks and you take a snapshot at what's happened there, have we really achieved what we aim to achieve as Transnet? No, we haven't. We failed dismally. If you go and have a look at the R, it's just going backwards and backwards and backwards. We tried to revive that company, but was there a lack of commitment from managers? Was there a lack of commitment from the board? Was there a lack of commitment from the group CE? Those are the questions that they need to answer, because at the end of the day, you need to find a balancing act. As are you trying to run this organization to create profits? And or are you wanting to balance the profits with creating jobs and reviving the rural areas to be able to produce for the country as well? If one looks at the 1064 contract that was launched, I think it was 2014, I happened to be at that launch, and I was fortunate to ask the then board chairman, Mafika Makwenazi, is all the I's dotted and all the T's crossed, and he assured us that that was done. But if one looks back in hindsight, we can see it was never done. And I think that before we enter into these contracts of billions, I mean, if one looks at the locomotive deal, which was supposed to have been 50 billion plus, how much damage has it caused this country at large? Have we really reaped the benefit of that? And I think what we need to do as role players, all of us, labour, government, business, we need to partnership with each other so that we can find solutions to this and stop corruption where it has taken place to the benefit of this country. We cannot continue under the same guidance that has happened in the past. If we just sit back and we look at China, for argument's sake, how did China grow its economy? And how did they go and create rural growth in their rural areas? They moved factories. They built factories in the areas. I mean, if you're going to look at the locomotive environment in China, they built factories to supply electric motors in various parts of the country. And those factories have brought the benefits to revive the economy of China. We can do the same thing in South Africa, but we need, obviously, the right role players, and we need to stop talking about these things. We need to engage, and we need to implement the plans that we've got on the table. I think a lot of our time is spent talking about things, and not sufficient is put into the actual doing of what we're supposed to be doing. If we look at Transnet, where we are today, and I want to raise just some pertinent points for the role players around here that might not be aware of what is happening, that could bring light to the subject as well. A train that's supposed to move from Kazerne in Johannesburg to Durban, it's supposed to take around about 12 hours, right? It moves out of the Kazerne yard and it gets to the first signal. The cable is stolen. Then we get manual authorization where the driver phones the train control officer and he gives them authorization. You can move to signal the next signal. You get to that signal, the rail's broken. Theft has taken place. Eventually, he gets to past Heidelberg. Now you think that the train should be moving at least at about an 80 kilometer speed. No, we've got speed restrictions. It's between 30 and 60 kilometers due to the condition of the rail. So at the end of the day, that train that's supposed to move in 12 hours gets to Durban, if we're lucky, within 24 hours. You can imagine the cost of overtime that this creates to the employer. So we need a collaborative process where we get government to either sit down and say, how do we ensure that the theft of cables, the theft of our rail, the theft of all the parts that are taking place, how do we stop that? Because that is deterring Transnet to be able to deliver the goods at this point in time. That's the reality. And unless we're going to deal with that reality, we're not going to solve the problem. We've got to solve that problem first before we can get to the next problem. And once we've solved those problems and we find that the rail is working 100%, then we can get to say, yes, where do we start investing in the rural areas? Where can we start doing this? Because we can decide as well to take not all the profits of Transnet, but we can take a portion of those profits to reinvest in the country. But at this point in time, everyone is running to road, because Transnet cannot supply the customer with that determined time schedule to say, your goods will be in Durban by 6 in the morning. And the only way we're going to be able to do that is if we, as Labour, as Transnet, as Business South Africa, and government sit down and find a solution to the theft that's taking place in this country. And I've stated on numerous occasions, if I steal a bottle of water, I'm going to steal it for what? So that I can sell it. So that I can earn a few cents. But if I stop that, and I haven't got the opportunity to be able to get rid of the goods that I stole, we're going to stop the theft process that is cannibalizing this country. And we can only take hands together. We can sit around this table and we can say, yes, we've heard you, Untu, that you've made the statements that government must deploy the South African Defence Force. We've never said that government must deploy the South African Defence Force to secure people. We should do that as an interim solution to try and get rid of criminals. Because you go today and you repair that cable, tomorrow that cable's stolen. So it's just a circle that evolves around each other in the process. And unless we deal with that critical issue, I mean, I heard some of the speakers refer to the Criminal Amendment Act. I mean, we were instrumental as Untu, through producers, to bring that about. And we've heard, Judge, I think it was you, sir, that said one person has been charged under that act. Why did we then develop that act? I mean, surely people that steal cable should be charged under those acts. That's why we brought it about. And unless we're not going to take drastic measures, we're not going to find solutions to the country's rail problem. And we can sit here and we can talk about it all day, but we need to go and identify what is the issues and deal with those issues. We can contract security contractors, private security contractors. They're not geared to deal with this type of theft that we're experiencing, both in Transnet and Passenger Rail South Africa. So we need to bring back a force that can deal with the criminality in the rail industry. And then we can take, once we've got that corrected, we can then go down and say, once the profits are realized from that, then we can look at where can we build in the rural areas, factories, etc., that can supplement goods or parts to the South African Transport Services or to the Greater Africa for that matter. And I think that's what we need to do. Thank you for the opportunity, Mr. Chair. Steve Harris, sorry. I'm a bit deaf, sorry.
We wanted to know your name, Mushra.
Steve Harris.
Thank you so much, Mr. Harris. Honorable members, we don't have other presenters, including the first one who was claiming to be on his way, Mr. Thomas. Mr. Mike Walwin. Mr. Mike Walwin is still on his way up until now. Maybe when we leave, he will still. Some people travel a long distance to be here. Therefore, on those basis, I will ask the members to just interact with those inputs. Honorable Kashania.
Thank you, presenters, for
Honorable Kwakwa. Okay. Montwell. Okay. Yes.
Thank you, presenters, for presenting. I'm sorry that there's nobody senior from Transnet here to hear this presentation, and I hope that the department will respond to them, will report to them in very clear terms, because they need to hear what has been said across the board from labor through business through people on the ground. And I think that this is a very important message, which they've heard before, and they must hear again in great detail. I think it's extremely important. When I saw what was being addressed last night, I scratched my head and I did a little bit of thinking about some of the opportunities which we might address. But as Mr. Harris has said, there is some spadework to be done before those opportunities can even see the light of day, because there are too many structural impediments to those seeing the light of day. But nevertheless, allow me to just share with you a couple of those ideas, largely focused on the rural areas, opportunities, and small business opportunities. But as I want to stress that can only be done properly when the structural issues are properly and honestly addressed, which we haven't in this particular SOE, just like in other SOEs. So there's a huge property portfolio that sits with Transnet across the 278 municipalities, and they need facilities management. There's a massive opportunity there for people to get involved in facilities management, not cater deployment and party deployment, but proper facility management on a local level. Secondly, Transnet employs 50,000 people. Where do they eat lunch? There's a catering opportunity here. These are business opportunities which need to be looked at. In terms of rural development, Transnet is a point-to-point business, and it has 22,000 kilometers of rail, if I'm not mistaken. There's a massive underutilization of slots, as you've said, and why can't we use these slots to facilitate rural to metro, product and produce to market? That's absolutely necessary, and it hasn't been done. And then the impediments Mr. Harris talked about en route, which need to be fixed. This is a mess of gargantuan proportions, and it is a huge business, second to ESCOM. And yes, this one shows some profitability, but we need to examine the profitability and see exactly what's going on. Thirdly, there's another opportunity. Ballast, black rocks that sit between the rails. Where do you get your ballast from, Transnet? That ballast could come from local opportunities. At the moment, it gets brought in from elsewhere. That rock is available everywhere. You just have a quarry of local people. It's a low-tech industry. It can be done, but nothing is being done. Next, where do you buy your rails? I'll tell you where you buy your rails from. You buy your rails from Austria. So we supply iron ore to Europe, and they produce rails, and they sell it back to us. Hallelujah, that's very clever. It's an opportunity for intermediaries, and guess who, to make money. Meanwhile, Eiffel Steel is closing. These are ridiculous situations. Now let's look at ports, a very big opportunity. How do you make ports attractive to global trade? Ports, as we've been told, the huge queues there, but we don't increase the capacity. We don't increase the technological requirements that Amsterdam and China have pioneered. We sit there doing the same old thing in the same old way. But let me tell you something, and you know this, that 16 billion rands, half of which is profit in the ports, which is EBIT, is profit. It's 8 billion larger than the entire of Transnet's profit margin. Have we optimized that? Shouldn't we double Durban's capacity, which is full? Shouldn't we automate more importantly? No, we rest on our laurels and we draw money for nefarious purposes. This has got to stop. There are opportunities. This is just a scratch that I made. You gentlemen and ladies know better than me. You can come up with intelligent solutions. But you cannot feed intelligent solutions into an organization that is riddled with malfeasance, theft, corruption, and mismanagement. Thank you.
Chair, you forgive me. After my questions, not out of disrespect to the presenters or inputs, I'll have to run to the Chief of Forum.
I mean, who's going to answer your question? The response of your question.
Fortunately, you call them reflections and not questions. So I'll keep them as reflections, Chair. I think thank you so much, Jefferson, for this opportunity. And thank you for your inputs, comrades. I want Comrade Matthew, you started by calling the chair Comrade Chair, and then you stopped yourself. Allow me to call you Comrade Matthew throughout my inputs, because you're quite correct in calling him Comrade Chair, because he's a comrade. But well, you see, I don't understand. Maybe it's, if you look at page 2 of the narrative document, you said despite overwhelming evidence and public exposure, you are talking about what we've been saying specifically as some of the people who are concerned about. The fact that there's no one who's sitting in jail for state capture or their involvement in state capture. No one has been charged criminally, at which is a concern. It's something that, as this committee, we should be pushing very hard for, because a lot of the capture took place around SOEs. And I don't think we are vocal enough on this particular issue. But I want to assure you that I am going to quote this line verbatim in one of the debates in the House, and I will say it came from COSATU, an ally of the governing party. Maybe they will hear it when it comes from you. But there's an important point. Chair, I never understand at times. I get confused. Perhaps it's not a question for you, Comrade Matthew. It's a point for us to reflect on. I don't know whether people can still remember an economic policy called ASCISA. Right, the word ASCISA. And that is an ANC document. It's a document of this government. And one of the things it talks about there, it highlights a number of binding constraints. Do you remember that fancy English? And the deputy president at the time, former deputy president, Mlambo Ngcuka, was the one who championed that case. And she spoke about these binding constraints. And one of the things she spoke about was the volatility, for example, at the level of the currency, the South African rand at the time, which was a concern. But they also spoke about one of the focus areas being the cost and efficiency and capacity of the national logistics system. As an ally of the current governing party, do you know what happened since then? Because look, the point you are talking about, the inefficiency that one experiences at ports, are issues that were mentioned even then, and interventions where there were announcements about interventions that were going to be undertaken to try and address those inefficiencies. But more than that, document was published, I think, sometime in 2006 on the website of government. 14 years later, we're still talking about the very same inefficiencies. What went wrong? What is it that we didn't do properly? You see, I also, when I was sitting in a committee, I was in a different committee yesterday, Home Affairs, where we were talking precisely about the issues of theft and vandalism, but I think we're addressing an issue that had to do with the refugees here, the asylum seekers, who were terrorizing the city, and who showed complete disdain for the authority of the state and our sovereignty. And one of the questions we asked, because I'm making this preamble, because you speak about the importance of the hawks and the intelligence services in fighting against cable theft, and the vandalism and the destruction of our trains, especially here in the Western Cape. Are you able to ask this question? Maybe I'm not, because I asked a similar question to say, why has the intelligence agency not infiltrated the group here in the Western Cape, as an example, to gain a better understanding of what's happening? Because that's what used to happen in the past before they were politicized. Capture the group, infiltrate the group, isolate the criminals from those who have been misled, so that you can deal with the criminals and try to reintegrate people back into society who have been misled. The same discussion here is relevant, because you mentioned an issue where you were saying it's the security companies, but when it comes to cable theft, when you go to the townships, people even claim or allege that even taxi owners and taxi drivers at times do it when business is not doing very well. But cable theft, it's an allegation that is worth investigating. I'm not trying to say taxi owners or drivers are doing that, but there's a belief in the townships that, especially towards the end of the month, when it's busy, towards the end of the month, people allege it's an allegation, but it's only the intelligence services and the authorities that can be able to investigate that. We need to try and establish these issues. Look, Chairperson, I look at page 4 of Comrade Matthew's narrative document. If you look at some of the proposed areas of intervention. These interventions are consistent across all SOEs that we deal with. Yeah. When we're sitting with ESCOM, it was the first time I saw COSATU agree with Solidarity on issues. When we're there at ESCOM and you agreed that a forensic audit must be done, all of this thing, cancellation of corrupt and illegal contracts, even when you talk to SAA, it's the same thing. But the question is, why have we not done it? Is it a question of political will? Why have we not done it? Why have you as an ally not pressured your government to do it? Because these recommendations, most of the time, they come from you, and they were championed, unfortunately, during the ESCOM meeting by what is the union that broke away, Jimmy, and yourself? Yes, you were comrades there championing these issues. I'm done with you, Comrade Jimmy, Comrade Matthew. I want to ask then, Musa, perhaps it's not even a question, it's another point of reflection to say, why is it that, I think it's an easy win for government, if you want to reduce the cost of living for our people, then if they are saying 25 to 30% of the total cost of food related it has to do with logistics, isn't that an easy win? Isn't that an easy win to reduce the price of food? Right? Apart from focusing on exporting it to other countries, but that's an easy win for government. And these interventions are easy. It's things that we should be talking about when we talk about, when we go to SONA, practical steps, and not these dreams and so on of, what is it, mega state, whatever you want to call it. Because this is the issue, and it relates to the national logistics system and its inefficiency. Comrade Matthew made a critical point which needs to be followed up to say that all the rural economies are struggling, and the only way to revive them is to make investment again in the rail system of the country. Because look, even in the Eastern Cape where I come from, we used to go to King Williamstown and East London by train. There are no trains anymore. Do you know how expensive it is now to travel, for people to travel, even when they want to go and get their social grants money? To King Williamstown, cost them an arm and a leg. By the time you get your 400 rand, right, if it's a child support grant, you've already spent 100 rand on transport fees. And yet it used to be cheaper when people could travel by trains, right? Goods trains used to deliver goods to Middle Reef and other areas, but now none of that is happening because the system has completely collapsed on our watch. It's issues that we should be focusing on. Chairperson, thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, Honorable Kwangwa. That union is SAFTU, that broke away from COSATU. It's like another breakaway from the ANC led by Honorable Olumisa.
Honorable Olumisa and Honorable Malema.
I just want to you don't to forget about other breakaways.
No, we were expelled. We did break away, you're right. We were expelled. Hope was a breakaway from the evil. Honorable Gumede?
No, it's me who's having me, the lead. And I can play any.
They will cover. Okay, let's go to Matwane.
By the way, comrade means a colleague, so there's nothing wrong with that, calling you comrade. It means colleague or a member of an organization. There's nothing wrong. When I joined Transnet 11 years ago, by the way, I used to call some of my comrades and they took me for DC and approved that comrade. It means a friend, it means a colleague, there's nothing wrong with it. But anyway, so Chair, you know, having worked at Transnet for 11 years and coming here to this meeting to listen to the stakeholders, I thought I was going to get something out of it. But I've not gotten anything. The comrades are not saying anything. there's a clear confusion when it comes to COSATU, what Transnet does and what it doesn't do. The second page is telling us about Transnet transporting workers and labor. There's no Transnet that is transporting anyone. Transnet is a freight logistics company, freight. PRASA is a passenger rail service. So there must be a confusion. It pains me that we get such basic wrong. And I now find myself in a situation where I even have to respond to some of these people because they're just confused, including our own members. The comrade just left, and I was going to clarify him on most of the things that he has said. And then Buddha, I hear in most of your presentation, you're talking about the move from rail to road, but I fail to understand what is the case here. Transnet is moving today, or as at last year, more than 200 million tons of cargo. It has never happened anywhere, not even during apartheid. Apartheid was moving a fraction of that. So, and Transnet has not expanded, by the way, in terms of the rail. Transnet still has 30,400 kilometers of trail, the same kilometers they had 15, 20 years ago. But they are moving freight three times more than what they used to move. So what moves Transnet, and I'm not here trying to defend them, because I've got knowledge of what's happening there. For you to sustain Transnet, you need to move volume. And you can only get volume from commodities, bulk commodities. If you're going to go to Zanine and pick up 500 tomatoes and go to Cruz Marico to pick up 500 bags of maize, you're going to collapse the company. You need to move volumes. You need to go where the volumes are and get those volumes. And the volumes are there because Transnet is moving in excess of 200 million tons every year. They're moving 1,000 trains a day. As we speak right now, sitting here in this room, there's 1,000 trains moving from point A to point B today, every day of our life, even on Christmas Day. So I don't know if I need to understand where you say there are commodities that can be moved by transit but are not moved. But don't tell me about 20 tons. 20 tons we do it in a day. Something that 20,000 tons or 20 million tons we do it in a week. Something that Botswana does not even do in a year. Botswana, the whole country can't do 20 million tons in a year. We do it in a week here in South Africa. Now moving to UNDU, so I'm still going to engage you both to tell us exactly where are they falling and why are they not falling. Some of the issues, Chair, could be that these industries, they are so abusive. They would want to come and impose tariffs on you, the same way they are doing with Eskom. That's why Eskom is collapsing. It's because they are imposing tariffs. And those tariffs are not able to sustain the organization or the company, and the company automatically collapses. So, and it's one of the issues that we're dealing with when I was still at Transnet. But you can't come and dictate how I must charge you. Of course, rails are cheap, but it can't be at the expense of the organization itself. But you want to collapse the organization because you want to move your commodity. And that's normally what capitalists, they do. They impose those things, and then they use government to move these commodities for free or at a fraction of the cost. UNDU, your DDR, Wagon's Manufacturing Facility, was never a sustainable option. Never. So when you build a facility anyway, if it's your company and you are saying you're going to produce cars, you need to look at the market. You need to look at the equipment. You need to look at who are you selling to. And I said this last week, that unbundling Eskom is going to create the same crisis that Transnet is facing of unbundling Transnet. Transnet has got 5 ODs, operating divisions. Transnet engineering cannot sustain itself. It needs to go and look for customers beyond South Africa because it can't. With all the employees they have, all the facilities they have, all the machinery and the equipment, the balance sheet is bloated with assets that are just standing and doing nothing. So for you to sweat those assets, you need to go and look for customers. And there's no customers in South Africa. That's why we went into the rest of the continent to look for those customers. Now, if you go into the rest of the continent looking for customers, and you're manufacturing wagons in the R is way too far from any port. The nearest port, you need to move all that from the R to either Devon or to Uteni or to Saldanha. Now, that's a huge cost that you're going to move 100 wagons from the R to Devon. That is why most of all of our exports, actually, all of them, we're manufacturing them in Devon and in Uteni, because those are closer to the port. And all the coaches, we are manufacturing them from Saldanha, because that's the port. Countries like Botswana, like Mozambique, you can manufacture wagons in Bloemfontein, for example. You can manufacture wagons in Pretoria. It is, because then you don't need commodity port route, you move them out. If it's Botswana, you move them via Mafikeng. But to build a facility in the air and hoping that you're going to maintain it and sustain it, it's not sustainable. There are very few mines in Northern Cape. You've got CPNK, which is manganese, and probably two or three others. So it's not a sustainable business. The issue of the 1064 locomotives tender, it's something that all of us, we are just lumping everywhere and anywhere, but we really can't get to the gist of the issue to say what was corrupt in that thing. Even the Zondo Commission, I listened to it, I watched it, and I'm like, okay, so there was corruption. What corruption was there? The move from Devon, from Pretoria to Devon, who made that decision and why? But anyway, it's a subject that is sub judice. Let's leave it for now. Building of the factories is never a competency of Transnet. We can't blame Transnet. And that's one of the things that, by the way, we're saying today in the continent. When we meet with other railway stakeholders, is to say, in South Africa, we're, by the way, manufacturing our own ballast. It's manufactured here in the country. He doesn't know this comrade. What we don't have is the rail, the steel. And then we've got that steel company in Suriname, which is supposed to be manufacturing the steel that we want, but they are not. And there's no other player in the continent who builds the steel, who manufactures the steel. And that is where our shortfall is. The entire continent, the railways, no one can build or manufacture the steel. We all get steel from China and everywhere else. So we need to build factories, I agree. We need to push the stakeholders to build our own steel in the country. It might not even be in South Africa. Maybe it can be in Mozambique. It can be in DRC, for example. But Africa needs to have its own steel company that produces the rail. I agree with the theft of cables and rails, and that we need to get some form of SAPS to really check up their job. They are killing us. I mean, if you move rail and you collapse the 342 wagon train, you can imagine all this, what waste is that. All those wagons must now go for refurbishment and repairs and all those things. It's a huge cost that Transnet does not have. So there I agree that we need to do more. And if you were to put security as Transnet, then it's going to increase the tariff. And then the market will say, but we can't afford. So we need partners like the SAPS to really come on board and assist us in that matter. I'm sure Transnet, they can put security, but it's going to shoot up the price of the tariff. And imagine if you had to put security on 30,400 tracks. That's massive. And I think they're doing so much because each and every locomotive has got a camera. But camera can't help you to detect that there in front there's a rail that has been cut. It can't. The issue of the food. Yes, Transnet employs around 60,000 employees, but Transnet is scattered all over the country. Transnet engineering alone has got 132 maintenance depots. 132 maintenance depots alone. And then it was 7 factories. And each factory there's a restaurant there. So people are eating, people are buying there. And those restaurants are not owned by Transnet, they're owned by people like me and you. We can go and do provide our things there. Transnet provides for a space and then the service provider they come. So it's not a new thing, it's not a new innovation. Everywhere. where we've been, there is. Now, I want to put a challenge to stakeholders to say I think the indication was very clear that we need to understand the contribution by Transnet. But what we got today, what was the challenges that are facing Transnet, corruption, the what, none of you is really telling us what should happen. How can Transnet contribute to the economy of this organization, of this country, beyond what already they are doing? Because in my view, they are doing what is humanly possible and are contributing largely to the economy of this country. But perhaps what we also need to do, Chair, this is very controversial and I'm going to say it. We're going to be nationalizing mines very, very soon. And when we do that, the ports, we're going to see 80% of the commodities being beneficiated here in the country. So instead of channeling all this money to expanding the ports and everything else, it's time now that we channel it to building new rails that are going to lead to new factories at the concrete hospital. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Moderator. I think next time we must also have formal stakeholders engagement. We'll get people of experience and knowledge who left Transnet with rich information. Maybe they will tell us why did they leave. Yeah. Okay, that was my lighter note. Honorable Malinga.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think the colleague next to me has said a mouthful, except that nationalizing mines is not their mandate because they are not in government. they should wait until they are in government. That will be their point. But Chairperson, sadly, I agree with her, though she has a an advantage above all of us, because you see now she's bringing her background of working at Transnet. She's more clued up, and it's not about trust, but I'm saying all of these stakeholders. Can I be protected, Chair?
Yeah, you must also be protecting yourself.
But all of these stakeholders, I think they should have done their research to check who are the members of this portfolio committee before doing these presentations. Because you don't want to be found wanting when you come to the portfolio committee of Parliament. We need assistance. Transnet is not doing well. They are giving us challenges. My comrade from COSATU, you're telling us about what is out there in the public. Transnet has been corrupt, they use on the commission. You're talking about long-term plans. Corruption happened because there was poor management there. Poor management that you are still citing that is still there. But you're not telling us how, the how part. How to resuscitate Transnet. I think that could have helped a lot. With this issue of cable theft, Chair, let me welcome the proposal that there should be specialized unit to deal with it. But specialized unit, it means that if we are talking about subs, they still need retraining. That is still a long-term plan to deal with that one. Also with Busa, most of the people who are owning trucks who are finishing our roads, it's people with big muscles. Are they willing to let go of the trucks and put their goods where they need to? Because they are making a lot of money in the process. They are not even paying for the roads or refurbishing the roads that they are finishing. They are also killing passengers and people in small cars daily. And they are making their workers chair to work long hours. And this employees, they are fatigued and less paid. But Bona, they sit with big amounts of balances in their accounts. I think I will just end the chair.
Thank you, Honorable Malinga. Honorable Kwanaza, Honorable Utili is left. Honorable Kwanaza.
Thanks, Chair. Welcome the presentation. But also, I just want to support the reflection and the contribution by the honorable members, my colleagues. Chair, I don't want to lose focus on this stakeholders' engagement, because I think it gives us, as a portfolio committee, a platform to reflect on the thinking and the experience on the stakeholders, like we are ask them to make presentations, but also to empower us as the committee to reflect on the issues and also to take better information to enrich our work going forward. So I think it must be noted that we'll take some, we will not take some. Can I start with the presentation from Comrade Mick? on page 4 of your presentation, I'm interested, as a union, I'm interested on the how part of the bullet 1, 2, 3, because I know you stand on protecting the workers, your members, because some of those, they are your members. So I'm really interested on the how part, the ballooning management structure, unqualified management, and so forth. This is on page 4 of your presentation. But page 5, you talk about the rail network and hubs, e.g. at Sandin and so forth. So in your views and in your experience, what is it that we can as government to do that capacity, if it can be reassessed, it can be reused? I'm taking what Honorable Kwangwa was saying in his reflection, but do we have, as all the stakeholders and the role players, do we have a capacity there, and what will be the benefits taken from the contribution from honorable and the core function of Transnet, as indicated by honorable member Mawodo? Can I guess? Mawodoy. No, next time I'll get it right. Thank you for that. But Comrade Matthew, on page 7, you talk about the experience, the China experience, and the shift of freight to truck. Can you elaborate on that, and what should be the good lessons we can take as the country, and what should be your take on the whole thing? Just simplify the how part. I'm really very interested on that, because it talks about the investment, the capital investment that the government can do. I will ask the same question as I did in ESCOM on page 12. The how part of the worker representation on Transnet board, or let's say on the SOE board. I know that in every presentation, you really, I think that is your interest, that you want a worker representation. So I just want for you to elaborate more on that, and vis-a-vis the other unions that are in the region. In the same like my colleague said, the insourcing, I really support that. And also the maintenance and infrastructure, I really support that. But I'm really worried, Chair, about the part of the intervention that Comrade Medu said on the private investors' financial resources. Do we have, at the current moment, do we have private partners who can just come clearly and say this is what we want to invest, and especially on SOE, because that's where our interest is, and for the reasons known, and for especially for the 54th AMC resolution supported, and for the purposes of establishing the SOE. On with the workshop, am I saying correctly? Okay. Chairperson, I'm very, I always want to make sure that I pronounce people's surnames correctly, because I'm also want my surname to be pronounced correctly. Most people, they don't pronounce ancient by my surname, so I want to get it right. Mr. Boshoff, on your, you said roughly 25 to 30% of total cost of food related to logistics. Vis-a-vis, again, your presentation on page 15, the benefits of road, vis-a-vis also the benefits that you've indicated on page 9 of your presentation. A simple question for me to you is that what is it that we can do right to reduce that 25 to 30%? Because my benefit is for those people who are really receiving the end result, the end product, for them to be more affordable and stuff. Untu, Mr. Steve, you said we must go to drawing board. We must identify where did we go wrong. I think that is in the public domain. So as local as role players, all of us, in your view, do we have the capacity, like you said, we need to look for localization, for job creation, especially the contracts that are out there. So I just want to understand your views on that. Comrade Chairperson, that will be my take for now. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Member. Honourable Member, if you have something, because I'm just putting everybody to speak. Now, I wish to hear you say, say something. Yeah.
Thank you very much. And good morning to everyone. And Chairperson, my name is Honourable Member Komani Rosina. Yes, I'll be joining this committee going forward. Yes. So Chairperson, I was just familiarizing myself with the document because I just joined the committee. However, one could not clearly find in the presentation what is it that should be done in terms of the introduction that we got from the Secretary to say how would the stakeholders assist in with the skill regards to the development, job creation, promotion and everything. We did not get much on that. Anyway, COSATU and other stakeholders have been engaging. I'm from the Standing Committee of Appropriations. The same challenges that they are raising are the same challenges that they've been raising. So one would just not be sure as to whether it is of assistance or what, because the same capture met and these others are things that have been reported, they are there. But we should as well look beyond that and say how are we going to go forward. And equally, And my concern is that we cannot concentrate much on blaming one another, but I think we should also be solution oriented. And solutions that we should place in front of us should be those that would be of the betterment of the SOEs and everything. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Minister. I mean, Komani. Sorry, in course of Komani's question. So, thank you, Honorable Member. Honorable Members, I think we have to give our stakeholders an opportunity to respond to some of your comments. But I would like first to emphasize on what Honorable Komani has just raised, the issue of what it is that we think we can do. I heard that a lot from Kosar to Sai, but I didn't get it, Honorable Boshoff, I mean, Mr. Boshoff. Only the recommendation that is strong is more of trying to foster a tighter relationship between Transnet and the stakeholders' engagement, some kind of that. There is a sentence which is only one on your recommendation. I think the last one, a focus meeting between Transnet, DOT, National Ports Authority, and industry twice yearly. That's all what I got from yourself in terms of. But understanding, looking at the number of companies, big industry, big companies, you know, captain of industry, affiliates of your PUSA. Now, including banks, including big companies such as your Tiger Brands, your FarmWise, and so on, they are part of that. What is it that you think they can do to deal with some of the problems that we have at the what is it that we are coming with as PUSA to assist Transnet to recover itself and to be a viable company that is state-owned that could be useful for development in South Africa. Secondly, coming to Honorable Ms. Parks, you talk about exorbitant management packages and packs, and it's a problem of all these things. I think somebody made that point. That is a problem of all state-owned enterprises. It's also my problem that they are earning a lot. Some are even earning more than the president, you know. Now, I just want to check, how do we deal with that situation? I don't remember a single industry where people's salaries will be reduced. What mechanism we can utilize in order to deal with that kind of a problem? The last issue relating to that is about the management that is compromised. When I'm sure when you are referring to compromised management, you are referring to those individuals within the management of Transnet who are, of course, alleged to be involved in corruption. And then there is a Labor Relations Act at the same time that covers everybody. Now, if we say, and these entities, secondly, are financial troubles. Now, if you remove, let me make an example of what I want to from there. If we decide to remove her because she is compromised, as a CEO or as a senior manager. Yes. Now, removing her because she is compromised, meaning that while the process is still undergoing, justice system or investigation and so on, you will have to get somebody to act. And that person will have to be paid by the same financial challenged entity, you know. Now, how do we deal with that situation of justice system that takes long, including the fact that there are still a judicial commission in place that is still going on, but at the same time you have this financial problem in these entities? How do we relate those two kind of challenges that are facing us? In your input, I would like you to make a reference to that. Kosatu must help us how to deal with that very tricky to me kind of a situation.
So
let me start now from Mr. Harris, you were the last to speak. I'm starting from the back.
Okay, thank you. First of all, if I can just go back to Dar, it wasn't the factory that was set up there. It was a service level business that was set up for the rolling stock. And that was to try and revive the town itself. But I take note of what you have said. And Transnet should have also done their homework before they developed or had that vision in sight, which obviously they didn't do. But there is ways and means that we can develop or bring back the small towns and the rural areas that you can ensure that there is growth again in those towns. Because if you look at the R specifically at Noord, where it used to be the key junctions for the rail line from Cape Town to the Eastern Cape, from Cape Town to Johannesburg. And what has gone wrong? Why have they dilapidated? So I'm sure if we put our heads together, we can find solutions to revive those junctions. You must probably not bring them back to the same level where they were previously, but it can be a certain revival as far as that. With regards to the question from Honorable Makwanazi, am I right? You asked me the question whether we have the skills or whether we have the ability to have manufactured the spares as far as locomotives or any other spares are concerned. I believe we have. Transnet Engineering has become and has specialized in certain OEMs. Those skills are around. We should just develop them and retrain people and reskill them. And then we can develop those skills to be able to bring in small and medium businesses to be able to supply those spares. Thank you.
Your Honourable Bosho.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'll try to address all the questions. I think, firstly, regards to what Transnet currently moves, we did receive a presentation a while back at an industry sort of liaison opportunity with Transnet in terms of where the opportunities for Transnet is to expand. So we're not suggesting that they contracted. It's just that they did lose market share for a variety of reasons in the agricultural space. So, I mean, I'm just going to, unfortunately we don't have it projected, but I can just read off the slide here quickly. As it currently stands, 36.9% of the business is in the mining industry, 31.66% in moving liquid bulk, and then another 17.9% of their business is in containers, moving containers. So they identify that here's the area of potential growth, and to the tune of, I think it's roughly 60 billion tons, would be between moving agricultural commodities, including timber, as well as additional growth in moving bulk liquids. So as far as the agricultural commodities are concerned, I know in the grain industry specifically, and that's maize as well as winter cereals, there's roughly 15 million tons per year produced. And currently the market share is very small for rail. I think it's about 3%. So there's certainly potential for growth there. Where it will be, where the specifics will be, which branch lines. We're hoping that the research that all the social partners are assisting with at NEDLAC will give that indication, because as part of the terms of reference, it's specifically to find out how much is being moved on which specific sidings. And it would be in the Western Cape predominantly winter cereals, and then of course in the maize belt, the northwest province of Mpumalanga and Free State would be maize being moved from those areas to the millers in Goldenville. So I think that's sort of the potential. As far as the recommendations are concerned, Jefferson, so yes, absolutely, having a closer relationship with Transnet is required. I'll through you, if it's in order, I'll just ask my colleague to just add on terms of what the specific issues are that need to be addressed with regards to the client liaison with Transnet and the service level agreement that we're looking for. The other recommendations, Chair, is that perhaps didn't come out clearly enough, but to finalise the regulatory framework for public-private partnerships. So we did mention that both in the port space as well as in the rail space, there's draft legislation, but of course it's currently still draft, which would allow for third-party operators under certain conditions to become involved in rail transport and really for the investment to flow, because there has been expressions of interest both domestically as well as foreign, but from foreign investment. But it's very critical that those bills have to first pass, then those regulatory entities need to be established, and then they need to specify exactly what the conditions are, because that will be probably the final determinant of whether or not these companies say yes or no in terms of investment, or what the conditions are, what is the potential return on investment, and what do they need to comply with. The other aspect that I think is ongoing, but certainly needs to pick up space, is information sharing between industry as well as Transnet, because these investment decisions have to be made on both sides, both in the private sector as well as Transnet, in terms of which sidings might be economically viable to invest in. And there I think the research which is currently being conducted is vitally important. So to share that information is certainly, I think, a concrete recommendation. And then, Chair, through you, I'm just going to ask my colleagues also to come in.
Thank you, Chair. For the grain industry, service delivery is a very important aspect, and we would like to establish a service level agreement with Transnet around certain issues. Now, we've already said that the price of rail transport is better than moving agricultural products by road. So if this is not our first choice, then there must be something wrong. And it's from that premise that I would like to say we urgently need a service level agreement. And they need to step up the quality of their service. For instance, a truck that could take 1 to 2 days to deliver maize to a certain miller, we've got some instances where it's taken up to 3 months. So by the time that consignment gets to the miller, who must now prepare maize meal for human consumption, that whole consignment is riddled with insects. So that is one aspect that is not acceptable. The other aspect is providing us with clean and functional railway cars to load the product into. If we do not receive clean and functional cars, once again, when we deliver the product for processing, it is tainted. So the service level agreement is a very important aspect for us. And I can just say that for the grain storage and handling facilities, moving the product by rail would be their preferred choice if these small issues were rectified. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam. Honourable Cox. No, thanks very much, Chair, and I'm glad that Honourable Mkwankwa and Mwache said I can call you comrade, so I can avoid trying to censor myself. No, I think, Chair, yeah, thanks to the members for the further questions and their comments. I think we would agree with most of them. I think, Chair, one of the useful for us that we enrich each other's thoughts and proposals. We can only kind of build upon them. No one has got a monopoly on what exactly must be done, etc. We can just assist each other. And this is a kind of a discussion we need to have, because you can see as we speak the state is collapsing. SOEs are dying, municipalities are dying, and they're taking us down with them. I think Honorable Kachalia would agree with the sentiment. And ironically, we really need to have a debate about the future of SOEs. What is the future development of law? The existing models from the 1950s don't work. The structural change in the economy are so deep. If we stick to the same models, we're finding that SOEs won't last 5-10 years, you know? For example, what has happened in the post office? None of us post letters anymore, we do emails. But because we were so busy with looting, mismanagement, we've allowed these SOEs to die under our watch, including transit, etc. And I already from a chair that the SOEs are meant to be spurring economic growth, they're now a burden to the state and to the economy. They're meant to empower workers, and in fact now it's workers who are subsidizing the SOEs. So it shows you the huge, huge challenge. I think one thing we would want to let the members too, because I think Robert Kachal raised the issue of procurement, a good point. The Indian Public Procurement Bill, the Treasury has finally released after many years of talking about it, which is meant to further strengthen the state in terms of supporting local procurement. But again, Chair, the government takes too long on these bills. That bill is only going to be finalized to the public comment end of May. We had actually asked Treasury to bring it to Parliament by February this year to get it done this year. And those are the kind of the tools we need to spur local economic growth. So we hope that members could also put pressure on government as well, in addition to ourselves doing it. Honorable Kwankwa, yeah, we'd agree that. I mean, this is what we're seeing now in transit as a consequence of state capture. And it's all of us, it's incumbent upon all of us, from unions, from business, from members of parliament, across parties, to all put pressure. But look, government is one which must take responsibility at the end of the day. They have to deal with law enforcement capacity. We've appointed a new National Director of Public Prosecutions last year. There's an additional funding released, but they're not filling the prosecuting post. We have yet to see anybody of significance being prosecuted for state capture. There's no law which says you must wait for the Zonda Commission and other three commissions to finish to prosecute. Other commissions have finished. The SARS Commission, the PIC Commission, there's one other commission, I forget which one. But we're not seeing anybody being held accountable. That makes it difficult for the public, for workers to take the state seriously. But in the chair, well, we have to ask the role of members of parliament. One of the greatest failures of the fifth parliament is the failure of the parliament to hold the executive government to account. That is why they were allowed to get away with industrial scale looting, and we're now paying the price for it. Comrade Chair, I would be lying if I could respond to Honorable Kwankwa about what happened to Giza. Many governments have many policies. Every year there's a new policy, and they sit on a bookshelf collect dust. I don't think we have a shot of the policy, the issue of the capacity to implement. And really, we're just seeing a lack of political will, a lack of management capacity to implement all these things. We met with Eskom's management yesterday at NEDLAC, and they gave us a story about municipal arrears paying Eskom's bills. But it's about plans, no concrete actions. We saw a good thing yesterday, even though a painful thing, about Eskom now getting a court order to confiscate the assets of Mfuleni municipality. So those are the kind of things we need to start seeing now. We need to move beyond talking to action, Chair. We'd agree with Kwankwa about the role of the NIA, and you've seen the collapse of the NIA because of factionalism within the ruling party, because of corruption and industrial scale. But again, no one has been held accountable in the NIA. Books have been written. We don't know what more must the state receive. These are books. They just need to act upon it. You know, the cable theft, Chair, it's a mass economic sector. If you go to any scrap dealer, you'll find rolls and rolls of copper there. Police are not doing anything about it. We've raised a problem when they dealt with the criminal matters in a bill about 4 years ago. Why are we not banning the exports of copper? Why are we not requiring licenses to show you where is the origin of that copper? Doesn't take a rocket scientist to see it. But nothing has been done about it, Chair. We passed these bills and then we've contented our government to forget about it, to allow the police to do nothing. So we really see the challenges, Chair, is a lack of political will. But look, we can't also just complain and give up. We have to keep putting pressure, even to members' frustration that we might raise the same thing again and again and again. We'd have been from Rukwankwa that you see many Eastern Cape towns in the Karoo simply ghost towns today because of the death of transit in rural areas. So I'm not going to moderate, so my apologies if I'm not saying your name correctly. It's correct, transcendental paths are separate, they are separate from time and world, but they're integrally interlinked. You can't separate them in practical terms. That's why I was going to call the many unions about reintegrating the two together. That relationship is symbiotic, you can't separate them. But I think we'd love to hear from members what are their proposals also about saving Transnet. Well, we didn't really get that chair. But there's not all of us who are to ask members for that. Honorable Malinga, so look, besides analyzing our assessment of the issue, we've on pages 4 and 5, we listed about 18 intervention points we think that need to be prioritized. There might be obvious intervention points, but raise them because they're not being done. So we raised the issue that the key issue facing Transnet is about corruption. The fact that we have seen no arrest of Transnet speaks to the fact that they need to tackle corruption. We're not inventing the story from the Zonda Commission, but again, sure, we have to ask what is government, what is parliament, what is management doing to hold those accountable? They said the accused persons are free to run around society, posting on Twitter, making political comments, getting themselves involved in the ruling party faction and fights. Management not being dealt with. And there was good moves by the board to remove some of the most compromised managers, but that is a few individuals. But again, those persons have not been held accountable financially for some of the mismanagement and routine they've done under their watch. Yet the law provides for that. Chair, I think we've raised to Honourable Malinga's questions. With about infrastructure neglect, the criminal syndicate, the structural changes, and long and short term things. So those are their intervention points from 1 to 18. So Honourable Panani about the forensic audit and implication upon members. So look, the law doesn't depend upon the colour of your T-shirt. If our members are guilty of any criminal behaviour, the law doesn't need our permission of members. If our members are involved in corruption, the law will take its course. There's no clause in the law that says you can't touch a Kosaj member, or a Saftu, or a Fadus member, or a member of a political party. But we've been raising Fatawa and other affiliates, other unions, and Trans have been raising for years the bloated management structure of Transnet. And those are the kind of things which are going to lead it to its collapse. It's not just there, as you said, it's across the board. You can't believe how the packs that these guys earn. The argument always made that you must pay people well so they don't steal, but that's been proven wrong. But if you don't sort it out, you will find chance that it will go the same route as the SAA, and that will result in members losing their jobs. But of course, Chair, the disintegration of Transnet does have an impact upon the industrial sector, which impacts upon workers' jobs. So we really want to see Comrade Chair to report on quite a reinvestment in rural rail, from shifting goods from roads to freight, investing in passenger rail, rebuilding capacity, etc. And that can help to spur those growth of the cities. When you look at the population migration projections, Chair, Gauteng is bursting at the seams. I think it's now about almost 60 million people to be housing. That's projected to go to about 20 to 25 million in the near future. We are collapsing those things, we are abandoning rural towns, so we need to try to shift that by investing in these rural areas. And my colleague from Bursa said, the infrastructure is there, we're revitalizing it. You can do it. Chair, why would they issue worker reputation on boards? Look, so that's a standard trade union position. We think it helps to build the trust. It helps to share the expertise of workers on the ground to management about corruption, about how to improve productivity and capacity. It helps to address issues before they're blown out of control. It's a standard international practice from Germany, Sweden, Japan, etc., which has worked very well. The ANC, as our alliance partner, is always committed to doing it, but it very rarely happens. You find most of the SOE boards, there's no worker representation. That's part of what creates this gap between workers and management. So we think it needs to be done, but we don't want to see from a chair, it simply be a question of a minister appointing one friend. We think it's better that the unions at the bargaining unit at the SOE allow to choose their representatives to sit there. It's not a question of a friendship thing, of someone who can be manipulated with a little bit of money, but the structural representation. So that's what we put in the PIC minute bill, was that, for example, the PIC would have worker representation, but it would be chosen by the Public Service Bargaining Council in proportion to the membership there. So two would come from COSATU, one would come from FODUSA. So we think a similar position should be taken from ESCOM, Transnet, etc., etc. I think Honourable Chair, on Kwanazi's question about private investment, Look, we know the state of the is experiencing severe fiscal constraints, and that'll be the case for the next decade plus. That's why we say we need to have a discussion with the private sector, with the PIC, the DFI around impact investment. If you're talking about an 8 trillion rand pension fund industry, and if you just simply move from the 2% we have right now to 4% or 5% as provided for in Regulation 28, not even go to the full 10% chair, you can unleash huge investments in a sustainable way to spur economic growth. But the state will never have the capacity to, on its own, to carry this burden. And we think, Chair, the one priority we want to see there is around investing in ports, because you'll see an immediate economic benefit. We can increase our exports much faster, etc., expand our markets, as well as rail for both freight and for commuters. To Honourable Komali, yeah, look, we're raising the same challenges because they're not being dealt with. We've been raising for years. Well, often at times when you do a budget submission, you feel like we're having to say the same thing again and again, but we have no choice. We can't just raise it once and say, we raised it 5 years ago. We have to keep raising until it's dealt with, until people are held accountable on the chairperson. So I think to comment, Chair, to your question, look, I think it comes down to political will. So if government has a political will to say they want to cut 160 billion rand from the public service wage bill, we would want to see government leading from the front, show the same political will to reduce what management earns. You can't have at Eskom 800 managers earning 2 million rand. Transnet, SA, all the SMEs. Chair, you have the CEO of Ngeni Water Board earning 1 million rand a month. Our focus has been what nurses and what teachers earn. We seem to see where we don't mind the labour legislation there, but when it comes to management, where's the management who have broken these SOEs? We want to hide down the LMA. So we think, Chair, there are ways to do it. One is to reduce the structure of the management. Government has to have the political courage to slash the perks. If management wants to take them to court, let's have that fight and see if they can win it in court. Chair, we don't understand why you have management of SOEs getting performance bonuses. All the SOEs are in ICU. Yet these very same managers who have broken them get millions of rand performance bonuses every year. Some of them are valued at 1 million rand just for the bonus itself. But we are quiet then, Chairperson. Some practical proposals around the Chair is that one is the government must freeze the management packages for the SMEs. You can do that. We think we need to be a bit more bold and test the water and actually institute cuts. Chair, you don't need to change the law to hold management accountable. Eskom is broken. Transit is bleeding. Why is the shareholder not holding the management accountable and demanding from the board consequences? The LLA is simple. You can dismiss someone, you can take them to a disciplinary hearing, you find them guilty. The fact that Transnet is appealing the Audit Commission shows you why you're going to hold management accountable. So I'm not sure why the shareholder is afraid to exercise his legal powers. Chair, another proposal we want to see, and we think there's now appetite from Treasury slowly around it, which is a positive thing, is to have one single collective bargaining process for the entire state. For the public service, the public sector entities, the SOEs. So the 160 billion rand we want to squeeze out of the wage bill is only for the public service. They're not touching the public sector entities, which includes, for example, SASA, SARS, etc. They're not touching the SOEs. So you really think you need to have one single process, you put a cap on what management in the SOEs and the entities can earn, and you start reducing the wage gap and reducing the headcount at management. Those are simple things that can be done quite easily, Chairperson, if this political will. Chair, also maybe for members' benefit, I think for the past 5 years, the department has been talking about a SOE shareholder management bill. We are told every year it's coming, but this has been going for about 5 years. I think that can be a useful tool to start asserting the role of the shareholder in the SOEs. I think I've answered all the questions, hopefully, Chair. Thanks very much, members.
Just wondering now whether we take 1 minute, because our time we're left with only 40 minutes. I mean, sorry, 30 minutes. I don't know whether we can take some last bites. Honourable members, is there anyone wants to comment? Comment, sorry, Komani.
Chairperson, once again, I think from the deliverance by the stakeholders here, it clearly shows that the committee, I'm not sure if I would say, we're not doing enough as the committees in Parliament to engage with the departments, particularly in terms of consequence management, because the challenges are being raised. We as committees as well see the challenges, be it looting, be it particularly corruption. But then, little is done by the committees, unless if the same committees does not have enough capacity to can hold the departments accountable. Because consulting is raising a fair statement to say, it cannot be correct that they no longer raise the same challenges as they've been raising, because they have not been addressed. And what I'm happy about is that COSATU is an alliance to the ruling party, the people who won the election. So the same should use the political capacity to assist in this regard. But Chairperson, what I'm saying basically is, what is it that this committee or the other committees of parliament are not doing correct, or does they lack capacity to hold the departments accountable and to make sure that all is done well for the betterment of this South Africa? And I think that's all for now, Chairperson.
Honorable Mawata, no, I'm just taking all of you are calling me. Sorry, I'm chair.
No, chair, thanks. It's the first state of affairs on the green issue that she raised. I think it's very unfortunate that it would take 3 months to deliver one assignment. I think it's something that everybody needs to look at. It shouldn't be. And if but I think the challenge is the service level agreement, like I said. Che, I think it's still open. So it's an area that needs to be looked at. I agree, it's unacceptable. You can't have a consignment that is takes 3 months to deliver. Particularly because green is a simple thing to move and not complex. Okay, and then I agree with the comrade of COSAT. You know, our seventh cardinal pillar, Chairperson, it says we need to have an open, corrupt-free society and government and hold the executive accountable. That is what he was saying. We here, as EFF, to hold the executive accountable. Maybe the other comrades on my left-hand side are not doing that, but I can assure you that we are here to hold them accountable. Now, Chair, we must not, you know, the comrade, he can't say Transnet and Safa can't be separated. They are separated. And it's by design that they are separated. It's not separated by us. It's the ruling party that is ready to separate them. So as things stand now, they are separate. And you can't combine them until the ruling party says we want them to combine. By the way, we've been saying in Transnet that Papa was coming to Transnet, because it was in Transnet before. But at the moment, not, and it must be just like that. When you just translate on what it does, and then when you judge Trafford, because soon we'll probably be having stakeholders from Trafford. We can't be talking about translating on Trafford. That confusion must not come to us. On the issues of cutting of salaries and performance bonus check, no Trafford, way back, even before I joined, they used to have the same packs that they are having today, even more than what they are having today. And there was nothing wrong, because it was the management at that time. So now, because when we came in 11 years ago, when other comrades were there, 25 years or so, they started cutting some of the packs. Transnet people used to get houses. They used to get a lifetime medical aid and all that. They used to have food for the stadium until black management came in. That was the last few months of Chris Wells.
and then after Christmas was Maria Ramos came. So when they left, then they started making noise and said transplant must cut all those pegs. Now it means that the pegs are not suitable for black people. Because this same pegs were there when it was white people, and there was nothing wrong with it. But today, because it's black management, you can't have the same pegs. I disagree that the salary must be cut. I disagree. Because the work that they do is far much more than what anybody can do. And it's in the same industry level what other same industries are doing. Government bonus. They get government bonus because they've signed KPA that says you are going to, you must deliver 200 million tons of cargo a year. Now when they deliver that, they deserve bonus because they've achieved. And they even do more to achieve that. So it can be correct that we give them KPAs and say to them, deliver them. When they deliver, no, you can't get performance bonuses. They can take it to court because you misled them. There's a commitment. A KPA is a commitment. So I disagree that the performance bonuses must be. Of course, I'm no longer getting performance bonuses. I used to get them because I used to work hard. But I know what these people do, and they deserve this performance bonus. It can never be correct that they were given 20 years ago when it was white management. Today, black management, no, they cannot get it. That will never be correct.
Okay.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think the responses from COSAT to suffice my clarity seeking question. But all the same, Chair, I think we really do need, because I've seen in their presentation that a turnaround strategy is needed. I think all SOEs, they need an agent turnaround strategy because they are seriously bleeding. And they are bleeding under an economy that is not growing. They are seriously bleeding under a high percentage of unemployment. So we are rendered not only as the governing party useless, as all the members of parliament who sit in these portfolios who are supposed to hold the executive accountable. So I submarine chair.
Thank you, Honorable Malinga. Honorable? Commander?
I think ever since I came here, the flavors of the day or whatever, it's corruption. But no one seemed to come exactly, no one gets arrested and things like this. I'm trying to think, which sector is really corrupt? Could it be the boards? Could it be the management? Could there be a collusion between management as well as the board? Because I don't understand exactly who could have told others to do what, whether they are both colluding in order to get perhaps the corruption underway. You know, one other thing that is killing us here is the cable theft. Cable theft is all over. Perhaps we've got a very sophisticated South Africa or communities outside. Perhaps as government, it may not be related to you, but I want to get your version. As government, don't we have a policy or come up with a policy that may do away with all these rapiers? Because in many instances, as much as we do deal with recycling, but in many instances, I don't know whether can we go there and get those cables back or get any other things from those rapiers
and make it a policy that if they buy them, the will in place should be criminal in fact. You can easily charge them and take them to court. I'm not sure whether will we ever get rid of this corruption. Worse, because it's sophisticated now, it's so complex, with perhaps some of the other African countries coming in here, it gets too complicated. Chair, on a lighter note, you know, I want to say the relationship between Kaizer Chiefs and Pirates is the same kind of relationship there. It's a father-son kind of relationship, but they are more of the
I hope you're not being personal.
I'm Kazwan. I'm here to support the responses somehow. I was looking at the book, trying to find the book about the last note that Comrade made to finish his reply, the shareholders management bill.
One of those members and the our guests, the presenters, I would wish the time to be mindful that this was the second bite, the time to respond to the question would be a bit reasonable the time around. But I'm sympathetic to what one of the moderators is saying in relation to packages. But at the same time, on the same breath, exorbitant packages and perks for senior management or any people, including here, at the parliament, between the executive and the legislature. All those things depend on inequalities in society. Because if you look at those exorbitant salaries in relation to an ordinary worker or mid-management and law, it becomes too wide. And all those things consolidate and deepens inequality in society. That's why I'm sympathetic to a situation where we deal with those systematic kind of inequalities. Can you, Honorable, Mr. Meadow Parks, start?
Well, no, thanks very much, Chair, to Honorable Members. I think I would agree with Honorable Mani 100%. We have to put pressure on the state, because we are seeing the state is collapsing. The ones who are suffering is workers on the ground, the public, who depend upon the state for economic growth, for public services, and we are literally witnessing the collapse of the state left, right, and center. So all of the roles are playing. We think Parliament has got a critical role putting fire under the state. It might mean, for example, you don't just have a committee meeting with a department once a year or once a quarter, it's more frequent, especially critical ones which are bleeding left and right. We have to rebuild that culture of consequence management across the board, all of us. Chair, look, we've also raised our issues because members have said correctly, we started as part of the Alliance. We've raised our issues with the leadership of the Alliance. We raised it at REDLEC, we raised it at Parliament, we raised it publicly. The more pressure is put, the more we think things will get moving. At times people have swear at us. They swore at us some years ago when we said a former president must resign. But eventually, everybody came to agree with us and it happened. And actually, I think we agree with Honourable Matre completely. We need a corrupt-free society. We may not ever achieve that, but at least if we can deepen the checks and balances, the transparency, the consequences, we can do it. It means we must make a few bloody examples of senior politicians, ministers, management, the private sector, to scare others into behaving. But, Chair, look, I think we want to, on the perks debate, we want to make a distinction between management and workers. Workers on the ground receive very little, including in transit, they must receive their performance bonuses, etc., etc. But what we see across all the SOEs is a huge and a growing wage gap between workers in the SOEs, on the shop floor, and what management earns, irrespective of the colour. It's growing, and it's difficult to tell those workers in the SOEs to accept retrenchments because they're now being retrenched, or workers in the public service to accept wage constraints when they see management earning 20 times what they earn, that the performance bonuses of management is equal to a one worker's salary for the year, or 2 years, or 3 years. And again, Chair, management are not workers. They have a responsibility for the well-being of that SOE. And the fact that all these SOEs are on ICU shows you the failure of management. So it's difficult to justify a performance bonus for management, which has broken ESCOM, SAA, SA Express, SABC, Donnell, and this goes on and on. And we're not sure why these guys are not being shown the door. Because if a worker steals a loaf of bread, you can be sure he'll be dealt with very quickly, often made a scapegoat. But look, Chair, we know it's not an easy thing to happen overnight, but we need to take it one day at a time and one individual at a time. Honourable Chair, to Honourable Malinga, we agree. We're not convinced there is a significant turnaround strategy for Transnet. I mean, we do welcome some of the changes there, but not so significant enough. And right now we feel the trajectory for Transnet, etc., is not sustainable. And it is bleeding workers and the economy, etc. And we know, Chair, if it collapses, the first casualties will be workers will be told that you're going to be retrenched. We've seen now the failure of us to fix SAA. 4,500 workers are going to be retrenched very, very soon, if not more. I think, Chair, to Honourable Gumede, look, I mean, there's no one of us who's not touched by this cancer of corruption across the board. Across political parties, across trade unions, across business, government, even the churches. But we have to deal with it. For us, we think the real epicenter of corruption in Transnet is around the management, it's around supply chain, it's around the board, especially the previous board. Even the private sector itself is guilty of it. But Chair, we can't, because it's difficult, then shy away from doing a bit. In the scrap yards, Chair, we have proposed that, look, you can have the scrap yards, it's fine, they do perform an economic role, they help to recycle metals, etc., create some jobs. But we need to hold those scrap dealers accountable for the origin of the copper, for example. How difficult is it for them to demand from the people bringing the copper, where did it come from? Some proof. We have to rebuild that culture. When it comes to exporting, we need to require certificates of origin, otherwise we will simply ban the exporting of copper. And the police must raid the scrap dealers because they're not hidden things, it's easy to trace them all over the show. I think that's it from my side, from the chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think we're largely covered by Labour, but also maybe just I could say to reinforce that corruption can't thrive within one single individual. There has to be multiple parties involved. So I think irrespective of what constituency, the law must simply be enforced and take its course. And then I think just finally, as part of the turnaround strategy for Transnet, I think it is encouraging as well, maybe just to note that because there is potential business for them in multiple sectors. There is potential business for growth if we can just solve some of these issues through a service level agreement. If you have a willing supplier and a willing customer who prefers rail, all that's really left is just to sort out some of these operational issues. So we'd really just appreciate, I think, if the committee can also place some pressure on Transnet's side to do so. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Mr. Bishop. Mr. Harris.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, yes, just on a few of the questions. With regard to the scrapyards, we need to regulate them more. If we can't regulate them, then it's unfortunate. We need to put some regulation in there that they should not buy copper, or they should have a register where they say, where did they get this copper from? Because it's not policed sufficiently. I mean, as I stated earlier on, if I steal the bottle of water and I've got an offset for it, I'm going to keep on doing it. If I steal copper and I've got an offset for it, I'm going to continue doing it. So we need to do away with the scrapyard. I don't think that will be the solution, but I think it needs to be regulated more stringently and policed more stringently as far as that's concerned. With regards to the
with the other question from the Honourable Gumeli, is there corruption between boards, management, or both? I think there's both. And one needs to look at that. But it, you know, I sat here today and I attended a producer workshop a year ago, and the Minister of Public Enterprises said to us, you'll see certain people walking around in orange overalls soon. It's a year later. We haven't got to that. And until we don't get to that, we're going to continually raise it. Because we cannot just keep quiet and hope that it's going to go away. It's not going to go away. We've got to be seen as society doing something to those criminals. If they've been wrong, they need to take the punishment. And that's the unfortunate part. Thank you.
One of the members, I think, I need to take this opportunity to thank the members or our guests who have been able to honor this meeting and make their presentation. The whole idea behind this stakeholder engagement session, it's not about listening to concerns and challenges facing them, but also about their view and thinking in resolution, in resolving these problems and finding a way to turn these entities around. Hence, recommendations are more important to us than crimes. We sort of mindful as members of this committee of some of the challenges that are there. We have undertaken some of the oversight and we have seen some of the problems. But the whole idea to engage you, because we don't want to listen to the bureaucrats only. We feel it's important to hear from those that are there, are experiencing problems, are engaging directly or indirectly with the entity to help us. Well, in the tool, which is including this one, the first we were dealing with ESCOM, and without exaggerating or over rating COSATU, but the real situation is that so far COSAT has been always prepared at least to present something and provide us with the information in time. And we would like to appeal to all other stakeholders that continue joining us to do the same. It helps us. Also thank to BUSA, because they've got a reasonable apology previously, but this time also they have proven us that they were not just upset because they didn't have interest. They came this time around with something in their hand, and that is highly appreciated. We'll have to apologize to Mr. Harris from UNTA, the United National Transport Union, if perhaps the information came late to them. But I doubt it was our problem. In most cases, for example, last time we made an apology to Solidarity, that was they claimed that they have received the information late. But when I followed up with the secretary, it's actually them who have changed their email address and inform people they interact with on a daily basis. It's when the follow-up was made with the phone that they actually provided us with the correct email address, which is the contemporary one that they are using. Therefore, I will, of course, apologize to you, sir, for not getting that information time. But we would like
our stakeholders to get information in time so that they can be in a position to pray ourselves, to prepare themselves. It's not nice because we are living in the time, in the difficult times of this load shedding. Therefore, without having something at hand, it becomes very difficult to hear. You know, South Africa is a funny country, there are a lot of accents here. A person might not hear you because of accents, you know. If you are from the Western Cape, another one from, let's say, Limpopo, you know, taking talks, communicating with the same language, but because of the accent, you might not be in a position to hear you properly. I'm trying just to reflect that while you are living in the same country with so many languages, when we talk even the same language that all of us speak, because each and every language is informed you speak, is informed by your mother tongue. You know, therefore, because of those problems, one must understand that accent. I speak English in a Xhosa accent. Whether the Xhosa speaking better. Yeah. you know, that's a problem. Now, I'm saying, therefore, it's important to have a document at our disposal so that one can interact. I might capture you wrongly with my ear, but not with the eye looking in front of me. That I will correct that. With those words, we thank you very much for blessing our meeting. To the honorable members, as usual, thank you for your attendance. I think let's take this serious. It's part of learning process. We are still learning this entity. We still have 4 years to go. You know, perhaps by that time, when we end this, we must be different from when we started. We must be somebody else by the end of this day. Thank you very much, honorable members. I close. I declare this session. Sorry, the center reminds me of something. Take us through.
Honorable members, I think because I know that the program that members had, we were scheduled to have our strategic planning session at the end of this term, which was the next week, from Tuesday to Thursday. Yes. But in consultation with our managers, they have advised us that Parliament, which is the institution, has not yet finalized the strategic planning session, the strategic plan of the institution, which is the plan that will inform the portfolio committees in terms of their strategic plan. Because our strategic plan must be informed to what the institution seeks to achieve and what kind of oversight mechanisms we will be using. So we were advised to just, maybe they might give us an indication next term in terms of when we can actually start having the strategic planning session. That is what I wanted to inform the members on. Hence, there's a change on the program for next week. We're supposed to be having the strategic planning next week, but it won't be happening.
Thank you for that information. Honorable members, the meeting is closed.